Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Thursday, the 18th of September. Very nice to have you with us. Thank you for being here, and it's a delight not only to have you here, not only to have you here on these special days where we're trying to get money for our lockbox and fill the lockbox so we can avoid a fund drive. And you've been wonderful and so generous, and we thank you for that and hope we can keep it up. By the end of the month, it would be lovely, wouldn't it? So while you all do that, we all also, I'm just thrilled that we have such a great group of people on the show today, and as we have most days, and I won't tell you what the bad days are, but you probably know anyway. Don't you think?
I think the odds are very good.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you're just like, oh.
Let's start naming names.
Yeah, well, I won't do that. But it's not even the individuals. It's groupings. but you know, sometimes because we very carefully, through an algorithm, figure out who's going to work out the best. And you three came up. It's like, this is going to be just dynamic. So, perfect.
We'll fix that.
That's right.
So that desperate email of, we need one more person for a panel, that's all part of the algorithm?
Well, that
I have no idea.
That does happen, sure, yes. We have a role to fill, that's right.
Well, when I see the list and I see that there are three people on, including me, I take that as a compliment. When I see four or five people, they need people to fill up so that he won't have to speak so much. So.
No, that's not it.
No, I forget it.
Yeah. Sometimes I look and I think, oh, it just needs a little bit more kerfuffle. And then I think, okay, we'll do it with another person. And sometimes people have been said that they weren't going to do it and then they can do it. And, you know, it all works out.
Far too organized.
That's right. As been said many times in show business, don't tell them how the sausage is made. So here we go. Let me introduce this great group to you. We have the mayor of the city of Albany, Kathy Sheehan, is on the program, and we couldn't be more thrilled that the mayor has taken time out of her day. How are you?
I'm good. I am good. I am going to be leaving here and heading to the airport and making a final visit to our sister city of Nijmegen as mayor of the city of Albany, and no taxpayer dollars are being spent on this trip. I always have to have that disclaimer, but looking forward to it. They do an incredible commemoration of Operation Market Garden, and they are very, it's a wonderful tradition, and so we're looking forward to being there.
That's very nice. Well, how long will you be there for?
Just a few days.
Oh, really nice. Yeah. Yeah, well, great. Sister cities are important, I think, aren't they? I mean, I know people look and they see the signs and they're like, oh, well, that's okay, whatever that is. But it seems like an important effort.
I think when you can have a meaningful relationship with a sister city where there are exchanges, not just at the government level, but we're able to send a group of college and high school students last year, along with some representatives from Hudson Valley Community College, the Nano Center, and they interacted with their counterparts in Nijmegen. And so I think when you have those opportunities, you can really create even more, again, whether it's just cultural exchange or the opportunity to collaborate on, scientific developments. It can be a great relationship.
Well, travel safe.
Thank you.
And we look forward to hearing the stories on the other end. Next, you know what? I was minding my own business the other night, and I was just sitting there, and I was watching TV, and I had the streaming thing on, and all of a sudden I look down and I see you dancing.
Oh God! I can't tell you how many people saw that.
What?
So you know,
you look great. Who put you? They would have had to pay me so much money to do that. And I know you're doing it for charity, but still.
Well, it wasn't quite
screw the charity.
It was the first day of school for the freshmen at Albany High School.
Okay.
And I was there to greet them. And the superintendent challenged me to a dance-off. And so to prove to freshmen that you cannot literally die from embarrassment. I embarrass the hell out of myself. There you go.
Well, I saw it also that all the way south of here, and you were fine.
I gave you credit for being game. If someone had asked me, I was like, no, I'm sorry, I'll be in the car. Publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman, Ira Fussfeld, is with us. Good morning, Ira. How are you?
Joe and everybody, nice to see you. I was half expecting you would take the day off and Kimmel would be guest hosting. So.
Yeah, well, we try to make that happen.
Yeah, he has a lot of time on his hands. Yeah.
I think we all may have some time on our hands if we keep this up. That's the scary part. We'll get to that story in just a minute. Bob Brigham is here. He's professor of history and international relations at Vassar College. And we're thrilled to have him on our program. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. Always good to be here.
Okay, so let's talk about what happened yesterday. This is one of those things that I think is shocking, although not surprising. It is something that it's keeping in line with the character of this administration, if there is such a thing. Walt Disney Corporation-owned broadcaster ABC said it is pulling Jimmy Kimmel Live indefinitely. And I do want to stress the wording there of Jimmy Kimmel Live being pulled indefinitely. The president in his Truth Social remarks several times said that the show had been canceled. We have not heard from Kimmel. We have not heard from Disney. So we're assuming that the original statement that was made in indefinitely is on hiatus indefinitely. But the question is, will that show ever come back? And we can talk about that in a moment. This is following backlash over the host's remarks about slain right-wing activist Charlie Kirk. The move comes after station owner Nexstar Media Group says it would yank the show from its ABC affiliate stations as a result of the comments. The Irving, Texas-based Nexstar announced Wednesday that Kimmel would be off its stations for the foreseeable future. Nexstar strongly objects to recent comments made by Mr. Kimmel concerning the killing of Charlie Kirk and will replace the show with other programming in its ABC-affiliated markets, which includes the Albany market, I should note, a company representative said in a statement. Kimmel said during a monologue on Monday that Tyler Robinson, the Utah man accused in the shooting death of Kirk, might have been a pro-Trump Republican. He said MAGA supporters, quote, are desperately trying to characterize this kid who murdered Charlie Kirk as anything other than one of them and doing everything they can to score political points from it. Kimmel then mocked the president for talking about the construction of a new White House ballroom after being asked how he was reacting to the murder of his close ally. Law enforcement officials revealed Tuesday that Robinson had liberal political leanings and expressed disdain for Kirk in communications with his roommate. I do want to get to the statement, and I thought I had it here, but I can't find it right away, where the head of the FCC, Brendan Carr, blasted Kimmel, threatened to take action. He said two things, and I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but one was, we can do this the hard way or we can do this the easy way. Tell me how that's not a threat. Also, who says that in their daily life? That it was some of the most sickening content he had ever heard.
He doesn't watch much TV.
Look, 15 minutes of Love Island. Come on, that's some of the most sickening content on TV. So this is where we're at the moment. The question is, what will happen with the show? And of course, the larger question is what this means just in general with the remarks that have been made of taking on of what we heard from the Vice President of the United States when he hosted Charlie Kirk's show, his podcast from the White House on Monday, and talked about how they were going to be going after these groups, saying that it was a network And then there was the president's action yesterday in talking about Antifa being a terrorist organization. And then on top of that, Pam Bondi talking about free speech. So there's a lot coalescing here together in just the week since Charlie Kirk was killed tragically, that a lot of action against not just people who have a reaction, but people certainly almost exclusively on the left who have been, and I think I say this with I believe the facts on my side, that people that the president has tangled with in the past.
Well, he's gone after the academics, and he's gone after various segments of our society, and he certainly has gone after the media. And this is another brick on the load. But I you know, there's so many ways to look at this whole episode, or so many ways to peek your way into the various permutations of it. But I can't help but thinking that the ownership of these stations, and to a different extent, the ABC and CBS with the Colbert incident, are bowing down. They're not fighting back. There is a defense here. We're defending against the First Amendment. We're defending against the independence of media in this country, and Right now, I suspect that there are a lot of newsrooms in this country that are chilled. They don't need to put the air conditioning on because they're all looking over their shoulders and know that there's a good chance that their bosses aren't going to stand up for them.
The a couple of things. One is that the show was did not run last night. Obviously, it was canceled right before the taping was to have taken place. Mr. Kimmel had planned to address the backlash to his comments during the Wednesday telecast, according to those familiar with the program, but Disney executives made the decision to suspend the show before taping began. And also, this was not said, I'm sure most of you know this, but this does come right on the heels of CBS canceling The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, ending a network franchise for over three decades after next May. CBS said the cancellation was for financial reasons, but many in the media industry have speculated that it was done to curry favor with the Trump administration while Paramount's merger was pending. And guess what? In this case, there is a merger pending as well.
Yeah. I mean, in the Project 2025, Brendan Carr wrote the essay on the FCC. And this is the playbook from that. And this isn't the first time the FCC has been weaponized, especially over mergers. To me, that says a couple of things. One, that we need public radio and public TV now more than ever, because these corporations are bowing in many ways to the pressure, because they know they're going to have to come before the FCC for these merger approvals.
Oh, let me interrupt you just for a second. 800-323-9262. Please
you're welcome.
Go on.
But what strikes me, besides the obvious use of the FCC here to do the administration's cleaning up, is that in the past 10 years, no politician, present company included, has benefited more from a free press than Donald Trump. The whole podcast world has benefited from this. And so it seems to me that there is going to be a backlash among Trump supporters. For example, already Senators Grassley, Hawley, and Tillis has spoken out very, very strongly against these kind of attacks by the FCC. Of course, Grassley had to add that the Obama administration is the one that really showed Trump how to do this by weaponizing the IRS to go after conservative groups. So I think it's going to go back and forth. This isn't the first time the FCC has played this kind of role as watchdog in this way, in a political way. But I think there are enough people out there who in the Republican Party who see this as a problem going after First Amendment rights.
Well, and I also think that this is really about money, that the concentration of media empires that we've seen since the deregulation that occurred that was supported in a bipartisan way. So it's not, you can't point one finger at one party or the other, but this has eroded over time and it has allowed these media companies to be held by very wealthy and powerful people who are focused on the money. You know, the days of, I think, you know, with the passing of Robert Redford, you know, you go back and look at all the President's Men and this time during the Watergate crisis when we saw these powerful media companies taking on the president and really demanding freedom of the press. You think about the Pentagon Papers, all of that. And that just seems so quaint now. And I think what layered on top of this is the fact that none of us, I don't certainly have confidence in a Supreme Court right now to say anything or do anything that will prevent what's happening from continuing to happen. I mean, you know, the case law is clear, time, place, and manner. There can be restrictions on free speech, but they have to be based on time, place, and manner. That's why you can't say certain things at certain times of the night. But to describe what Kimmel said as something that, you know, it basically requires censorship, that is a bridge too far. I can't imagine a Supreme Court agreeing to that except this Supreme Court. So that's the situation that we're in.
For the record, Jimmy Kimmel said, "We hit some new lows over the weekend with the MAGA gang desperately trying to characterize this kid who murdered Charlie Kirk as anything other than one of them and doing everything they can to score political points from it." That was apparently what the MAGA group and those who put the pressure on both Tuesday and Wednesday were upset about. And as I said, again, the FCC chairman, Mr. Carr, saying that that was a concerted effort to lie to the American people. The FCC was going to have remedies that we can look at, and said that it was sickening.
But you know, so he wasn't a newscaster. Like this wasn't, this is an entertainer, a comedian. So again, to say that, to have somebody from the FCC say that, really speaks to the fact that we are not living in or with an administration that will uphold the right to free speech. Because that's just poppycock.
There you go.
I'm trying not to swear.
Yeah, I thought that was the name of the dance you did, was the poppycock. So 2 points, and then we'll take a quick break. But 2 points I want to make really quickly. One is Brendan Carr went on Sean Hannity last night and said that the then sort of shifting, let's say, blame to both Nexstar and Sinclair, the other organization that decided not to air this program, as unprecedented. And I'm very glad to see that America's broadcasters are standing up to serve the interests of their community, Mr. Carr said. We don't just have this progressive foie gras coming out from New York and Hollywood. This is an important turning point. I will also mention that yesterday in his reporting, the CNN media reporter Brian Stelter, who had been in a conversation via text with Commissioner Carr, wrote to him once the decision was made and the show had been pulled and said, "What do you think of it?" And Mr. Carr responded with a meme from the TV show The Office of Steve Carell and Rainn Wilson and their characters partying in the office and doing a victory dance. There's that. Okay. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We welcome your thoughts on this. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Thank you very much for being with us on this Thursday morning. It's the 18th of September and 52 minutes past 9 o'clock. We welcome you. In a little bit, we'll be going over to Lockbox Central and hear from Sarah LaDuke and David Gastina as they make the push for the Lockbox this morning. And we hope you can help in any way possible. WAMC.org. That's what you have to do. WAMC.org, or you can call us 800-323-9262. 800-323-9262. We do have a lot of letters on this, so let me get to them. Peter said, in case you haven't noticed, this country is all about money, not democracy. As long as the wealthy get richer, to hell with democracy. Get used to it. And by the way, this country has always been about the money. That from Peter. Hard to argue, but...
Well, let's face it. I mean, this is not a newspaper issue, but it is a newspaper issue, all media issue, and media is in difficult straits right now, and money is not to be scoffed at, because if there's no money, there's no media. So, but that doesn't mean it can't be done the right way and responsibly.
The this is a point from a listener made that it was one of the first things that struck me when I heard the news yesterday, and it's yet another example. But Alan writes and says, the same week of the Kimmel incident, the main Fox anchor stated that homeless people should receive an involuntary lethal injection, and there was no pearl clutching on the right. Explain to me who the snowflakes are again. Yes.
Yeah, I was going to mention that Brian Kilmeade, and they allowed him to make some sort of an apology the next day, but it certainly did not have the kerfuffle that came out with Kimmel to start, but a host of other people Matthew Dowd on ABC said something that was considered intemperate, and he was immediately fired. Kilmeade should have been fired by those standards.
A poppycock. Purple, I believe, is the term.
But, you know, and I think, look, people can go back in time and point to people getting canceled and making apologies and stepping it in and what you say and what you can't say. But I think part of the reason that we're not hearing more of an outcry from Democrats is that I think most Democrats do believe in that people have the right to say what they want to say, even if we disagree with it. And so I think, again, this is an area where we're kind of caught flat-footed because – It is a fundamental part of our democracy, this freedom of speech, and people have the right to say things that make me really mad and that I don't agree with, but they have the right to say it. And for the Republicans, you know, Donald Trump uses this word all the time. He talks about fairness. This is now things are going to be fair, you know, playing on this trope that somehow this, you know, white male victimhood, we haven't been able to say what we want to say. We've been censored. We have been put upon. And that's what he plays on. And that's how you can have this absurdity, right, of calling the Ford Foundation a terrorist organization and yet pardoning people who literally attacked the Capitol of this country.
$15 billion lawsuit against the New York Times.
Yeah, some of the speculation I've heard about that is, do you think he's doing it because he wants to put the New York Times out of business, or does he realize that this lawsuit has no merit and it won't go anywhere, but the fact that he's filed it and is standing up to the New York Times will play well with his supporters?
I canceled my Paramount Plus subscription the morning after they canceled Colbert, whom I can still watch for free via the free CBS app, this morning following the news that ABC canceled Jimmy Kimmel for making what was a truly non-comment about Charlie Kirk. I canceled my subscription to Hulu, which shares the same owner as ABC. Corporations that bow to an American dictator rather than defend their and our constitutional rights can do without my money. I understand, Doug. I'm not there yet. I'm not at the point of canceling my subscriptions. Not that I won't be, but I do have to say that, because I think the anger should be going more toward the administration and the FCC than it should be toward ABC.
Yeah, I agree with you, Joe. And I think part of the problem here is how the FCC is constituted. The president gets to pick five commissioners. They're confirmed by the Senate, and then there's absolutely no congressional oversight after that. And there have been efforts in the past to revise this standard and to bring the FCC more in line with other regulatory industries, and these incidents are probably going to spark that debate again, and maybe there'll be a change. It does seem to me to be an awful lot of power without any oversight at all.
Marty says, Kimmel previously posted condolences to Kirk's family after his murder. Trump also stated immediately after Colbert was fired that Kimmel was next. It's obvious these comments are being used as just an excuse to curry favor with the administration for the upcoming merger, which needs FCC approval. Corporate media will not protect us from fascism or censorship.
I think that's an excellent point. And I think that historically, we did rely on the media to stand up for their right to broadcast what they want and when they want. And that is not going to happen. And I think that part of it, it's an excellent point, because those days are gone. I don't know that they'll ever come back.
I was reminded of the time when the Smothers Brothers were taken off the air for their views on the Vietnam War, and I guess that is similar, except without the, because of the makeup of the media and ownership and so forth, that was less about money and mergers and more about power and feeling that wasn't a way to go.
Did that coincide with the Newton Minow days, or was that prior to that? For the uninitiated, Newton Minow was the chairman of the FCC in the Nixon-Agnew era, and famously said television is a vast wasteland. And I remember, obviously I was much younger and didn't digest all of it, but I remember it was quite a stir at the time. But I don't remember the FCC being a big public player since then, and we're talking 50 years.
It was always kind of behind the scenes.
Yeah, exactly what.
There have been these things that have, in that case, it was CBS that canceled the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour in 1969. And then the two filed a breach of contract suit and won. So there is that. It'll be interesting to see. I'm going to just real quick idle gossip with Ira, but you know, you were saying that it seems unlikely that Kimmel will come back, and I agree with you. I think right now it seems like the silence is probably of them figuring out how to satisfy the contract and work on a package to end the show.
Yeah.
I hope that's not the case, but it certainly seems that way. We'll take a break. We'll come back and we'll continue our conversation. Ira Fussfeld, Mayor Kathy Sheehan, and Bob Brigham. We will continue with the lockbox push with Sarah LaDuke and David Gustina after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We've been discussing the removal of Jimmy Kimmel from the airwaves by ABC and the actions and threats of the FCC in this particular case after Kimmel made comments regarding Charlie Kirk, which were thought to be, quote, sickening. We do have letters. I want to get through just a few of these, and then we'll move on to other topics, I promise. Anthony said, didn't the Utah governor say something similar to what Kimmel stated? The Utah governor said, I was praying it was someone from another country. So what are your thoughts on that? Well, none of this makes sense, I don't think. I mean, there's no, like, it doesn't make common sense.
Everything's about context. And
yes.
Yeah, what they need to to have in front of them.
Then we go to, let's see, this is from Diane. Will the mayor be making a trip to her sister city in Ukraine? Do we have a sister city in Ukraine?
We do. I traveled there last June and visited our sister city there. We are continuing that sister city relationship. Obviously, things continue to degrade in Ukraine from a safety standpoint with the increase in drone strikes by the Russians on civilians in Ukraine. So I don't anticipate being able to go to Ukraine between now and the end of this year. My term ends on December 31st, but certainly we continue to be in communication with our sister city. There's a group that's going over and bringing more humanitarian aid, which is something that we also support.
That was question one from Diane. Question two and three, when will CBS totally pull Colbert, and when will NBC pull Fallon and Seth Meyers?
Well, Colbert's contract, I think they said a year from when they made the announcement.
It ends May. I think he said during the Emmys after he won the Emmy that he was out of work as of June. I mean, it doesn't mean that they can't do basically the same thing and just take the show off the air.
Yeah.
As far as NBC, there are merger issues there too, so that could certainly threaten the shows of Jimmy Fallon and Seth Meyers. But we'll see how that goes. Again, none of this, you know, I said at the very beginning, and none of this is surprising, because the president, the day of the Colbert, said Kimmel is next, and after that we'll go after Fallon and Seth Meyers. So you can only assume that he's doing what he said he was going to do.
Well, you know, the discussion that is going to continue long after Kimmel's fate is finally determined is the issue of free speech and stifling free speech. And you will hear the argument, and I don't entirely disagree with it, that Kimmel and all of the others who have been vilified for what they said, they're being silenced for at their homes, at their networks, is not diminishing their free speech. You still have free speech, but you don't have to have it where you are doing. In other words, the boss can say, you can talk about this all you want, but you're not going to use my air to do it. When I was working, fortunately, I can't remember this happening very often, but if somebody, a letter to the editor or a columnist wrote stuff that I thought was objectionable, not that I disagreed with it, but was objectionable, and said, no, you can't write for us anymore, I wasn't squashing the free speech. I said, you can do it all you want, but just do it somewhere else.
Mayor, you made a good point, and I believe it was during the break, so I'm going to repeat it because if people didn't hear us during the break. but you made the very good point. This used to be advertisers.
Right. Advertisers would say, we're going to pull our advertising if you air this particular show or this particular person or this particular viewpoint.
That was the case with Megyn Kelly when she made her comments on her Daily Show on the third hour of the Today Show. That was led by the advertisers.
Right.
Well, and this is where the financial health of the media organizations comes into play. I can recall vividly a major advertiser in our market who pulled the ads for us because he didn't like a series we were doing about someone close to him. And at that point in time, we could say, oh, that's a $100,000 account. All right, we'd rather have it than not have it, but we can afford not to have it. You don't hear that kind of discussion anymore. They can't afford not to have it.
Dave writes, on Monday, former President Trump stated that he is considering designating far-left anti-fascist groups as domestic terrorist organizations. It is important to note that Antifa is not a centralized or unified organization, but rather a loosely affiliated movement composed of individuals who oppose fascism, racism, right-wing extremism, and neo-Nazism. If this claim is accurate, it raises serious and troubling concerns. That from Dave. Then there is Mike, a private corporation removed an employee, but the only reason they did it was to secure a gigantic merger which needed approval by Trump's FCC. The only tool we have left is to boycott all things Disney, ABC, and yes, even ESPN, because money does talk. Then we go to this letter from Catherine. If this is just about money, then we are selling something very unique in its impact on the world, harkening back to yesterday's discussion about Constitution Day and the history and impact of our U.S. Constitution. And we're doing so very cheaply, with the eventual outcome of complete moral and cultural bankruptcy of the United States, which is consistent with Donald Trump's business model. That from Catherine. All right, we'll move on to other stories on this Thursday morning. And we thank you for your letters, and we welcome them on future subjects. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Mayor, you brought this up earlier, and I think I do want to talk about Democrats releasing their own funding proposal as the government shutdown looms. Congress has less than 2 weeks before the deadline. Republicans will need Democratic votes to steer legislation to avert a shutdown through the Senate. The Democratic written measure would extend Affordable Care Act subsidies put in place under the COVID-19 pandemic, restore funding that has been frozen by the Trump administration, and reverse the cuts to Medicaid enacted under the GOP's tax and immigration bill. Democrats laid out their own government funding extension plan Wednesday as they continued to indicate they're ready to oppose a GOP spending proposal to avert a shutdown on October 1st. Democratic lawmakers also added restrictions on how the administration can spend federal funding to protect policies they say they would seek if they had been part of a bipartisan negotiation to extend government funding. They are seeking to address concerns that President Donald Trump is encroaching on Congress's spending powers, as the president and his budget officials have sought to withhold funds from programs they disagree with, even after they're approved by Congress. Mayor, let me, that from the Washington Post, reporting from the Washington Post. Mayor, let me ask you two questions about what I just read. One is, why didn't they do this sooner? Is my first question. And two, so what, and given the timing that they have chosen, what, how do you think this will play out as we march toward October 1st?
Well, I think also importantly, in the reporting, it says it would return $491 million to public broadcasting. So, yay, public broadcasting. But I think what has happened is that this administration has used the budget, but also its executive powers to move money, take money, withhold money in ways that we are now all seeing and feeling and experiencing that was not the case when the first budget was voted on. And so I think that the rallying cry, the ability to really point to the harm that has been done in red states and blue states, in rural communities and in urban areas by these decisions that have been made to pull back funding that was already authorized by Congress, I believe will help to rally support around, nobody wants a government shutdown, but around a government shutdown if we understand exactly what we're fighting for. And I think what has crystallized over these last few months is really understanding what it is that we're fighting for. And what we talked about at the top of this program is a perfect example of what we're fighting for. We need public broadcasting now more than ever, and we're seeing it and experiencing it by what we're seeing happen in the commercial space. So I think that there is an opportunity here, and I think it's also about Congress taking its power back. This is a Congress that has basically laid down for the executive branch and is doing nothing to exert the power that it has in our Constitution as a third branch, as a branch of our government that we expect to exert and exercise its power. They should be flinching anytime the executive tries to take power away from the legislative body. There should be pushback. That's how democracy is supposed to work, and we haven't seen that. So we will see how this transpires, but I think rallying around some of these very specific areas where people have now felt those cuts, they're seeing programs cut, they're seeing the impacts of this, this is the time to fight back.
Yeah, I think maybe the Democrats are resurrecting the ghost of Lyndon Johnson, remembering that they're a political party and that they have a role to play in all of this. Some of the other things that have been added back in here are $5 billion more in foreign aid, money for security for Congress and the courts. It's a whole host of things. But I think, as the mayor has said, the most important might be this whole idea that the president cannot cut money that Congress has already allocated. That's a key principle that Democrats should fight for every day, all day long.
Well, I hope the Democrats have studied this route. And I don't disagree that this is the route they should probably be taking. But this is an extremely important point in the health of our government and in anticipation of the midterm elections, because the Democrats are probably going to have to own this shutdown if there is a shutdown. They may want to own this shutdown, and then it becomes a question of how they explain this to the public. We know, I think, even many Democrats will acknowledge that over the last number of years, the Democrats' messaging has been terrible. And if they're going to do something and they're going to force the closure of the government, something as radical as that, they're going to have to be able to defend it and explain it. And if they do, they can very well win the House and the Senate in the midterms. But if they don't, it's going to set them back. And they're just getting up from being on their heels all this period of time since the last election.
Well, I think all of the polling shows that the Democrats are perceived as weak. That
right.
is the word that is used with respect to the current state of play.
It seems to be accurate.
Well, a lot of it is the explaining, right? So,
right.
So the question of, well, what do you want us to do? We are not the ones in power. People don't want excuses. They want to see action. And I think that this is a response to that. And I agree the messaging on it is going to have to be about we're punching back. We're fighting for you. We're fighting for working families. We're fighting for seniors. We're fighting for health care in rural areas. We're fighting for Big Bird. We're fighting for the values that all of us take for granted, and we can no longer take those for granted. So I think that we need to really focus on that messaging. And as you've seen what has happened over the summer and over these with everything that's been taken away, we have stories now, again, in red states and blue states that speak to the harm that is being caused and the fact that we do need to fight back. And we need to fight for the future of this country.
When you look at the possibility and what we just said of quote owning a shutdown, I'm just, it's wearisome of how we've gone back and forth. I mean, the shutdown, if we could take the tape from the last 12 of these and just play it over again, I could take a week off.
Your listening public would miss you, Joe.
Well, and I them.
But I Kimmel sent a mini-series.
Yeah,
we're going to call it Shut It Down.
But I mean, this is it, right? I mean, we seem to go through this every 4 to 6 months.
It is remarkable that here we are. At the state in the republic that we are faced with these nuclear options or nothing. And I think some of that is because the Democrats haven't done a good job up until now coalescing what public sentiment seems to be, which is in support of many of these measures they're trying to put back. Who doesn't want $1 trillion put back into Medicaid? You know, people are really hurting out there already. But it's got to be, I think, longer than the next election. They've got to look out over the horizon and really figure out what's in their DNA. What are they willing to fight for? Where do they want to plant the flag?
Well, I don't think Schumer is lighting a fire in anybody. I mean, I think Jeffries is probably a better face of the party than Schumer is. I can't think of anybody else right now in the Democratic either minority that has somebody who say, "Oh, that guy or woman excites me."
Well, but I think that we also have to get back to storytelling and brass tacks. You know, we had the roadshow of AOC and Bernie Sanders talking about oligarchy. I mean, most people, they don't know what that is. And I mean, to me, that's not a rallying cry. We need to be talking about the kitchen table issues that Democrats have fought for and that we are losing and that are being eroded. You know, you have the undermining that is happening, the attacks on just basic workers' rights, the way that this administration is defunding communities across this country. All of that those are things that are impacting average families and their ability to put food on the table, to be able to afford housing, to be able to get their kids educated. And that's what the Democrats need to be talking about. Yes, I mean, I'm concerned about oligarchy. I'm concerned about the future of democracy. But those are not the rallying cries that are, I think, going to pull at people's heartstrings and get them out to vote and get them out to put different leadership in the House and in the Senate.
The shutdown would be at the end of this month. Is that?
Yeah, it would be October 1st.
October 1st. So it will be before the New York City mayoral election. I'm wondering whether that election will have any resonance in the rest of the country. And right now, the Trump and the Republicans are already seemingly rubbing their hands with glee in the prospect of Mondame winning. Will the country feel even worse about the Democrats if he gets elected mayor of New York?
Good question.
Yeah, that's why the election is a month after the shutdown, so he would not be part of it. But
I think all that hand-wringing misses the point, which is Mondani won because he's speaking about these issues. He's talking about what Americans and average working families need to hear, because they feel as though they're being left out in the cold. And so whether it's finding daycare, being able to get to your job, being able to afford housing, those are issues that we need to be talking about. Now, do I agree with his approach to how he wants to solve each of those issues? Not necessarily. Do I think he's going to be able to pay for them? We will see. But he's talking about those issues and focusing on them, and that's what people want us solving for right now. And so I think that all that hand-wringing beneath the surface, I think that his message, when you then spread that out throughout most communities, resonates. It resonates with people.
And to that, the Republicans will say, as they already have said, two words, communist, socialist.
Okay, but I want a roof over my head.
Yeah.
Right.
No, and so, I'm not disagreeing
so, yeah,
with you.
And no, but yeah. I agree. I think, yes, they will use those scare tactics, but Democrats need to refocus it on we have to see people. We have to see the struggles and the challenges that they are facing. And instead, we've got this cabal in Washington of very wealthy people who are doing things that are making them even wealthier, and they don't care about the average American. That's the lie. That's the lie, and Donald Trump has been a very gifted deliverer of that lie.
We have to take a break, but I just want to mention real quick that as right now, the President of the United States is meeting with the Prime Minister of the UK, Keir Starmer, and they are discussing large investments involving American and British tech companies, and that press conference is going on now. Obviously, we will bring you Details about all of that coming up at Midday Magazine at noon today, and anything sooner if it is breaking and we want to discuss it amongst this group. Again, we will be back in just a moment. Going to go over to Lockbox Central and hear from Sarah and David, and we'll be back right after this. I'm going to say something mean, but is that supposed to sound like that? just checking. 800-323-9262 to help the Lockbox. Panel at WAMC.org.
Yeah, I didn't know what had happened.
Do you see?
A new turntable.
Do you see how much money we need, folks? That's what our bumpers are going to sound like in the future if we don't make the money. 800-323-9262. All right. It is, we're with the panel. We have Ira Fussfeld, the mayor of the city of Albany, Kathy Sheehan, and Bob Brigham with us. And we couldn't be more thrilled by this incredible group of people. We have some time left, about 15 minutes or so. So we'll make the most of it and talk about other issues that are making news. Let me just get to that page that tells me, there we go. I wanted to talk about Donald Trump being in the, we talked about Trump being in the UK. Is this a big deal at all? Do we care about this?
He cares about this. He really likes the pomp and circumstance. And, you know, his mother's Scottish. His mother was a big fan of the Queen. So I think this is something that Trump really treasures. They did sign this big technology deal this morning. So that will be significant. The details haven't been really released, but a lot of it looks like huge investments in AI on both sides of the pond. So it's important. He seems to relish these kind of state visits. He had dinner with the king last night. And so it's important, but it's not Churchill and Roosevelt.
On either side of the table.
Really? but they seem to be, the Brits seem to be much better at just getting under his skin and trash talking him than Americans.
Yeah, I think you're right. But, you know, it's really interesting. They part of the protests against Trump's arrival in London was to flash pictures of Trump and Epstein all over buildings, all over London,
including Windsor Castle,
and they were shut down.
Yeah,
quickly.
Well,
So in the past, I think those kind of protests would have been allowed to go on a little longer than they are now. I think Stammer and company understand that they need a reset with Trump in many ways, and here we are.
All right, so let's talk about the Fed, because nothing makes a program more exciting than talking about the Fed.
I'll make it exciting.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, this is...
We lowered interest rates by a quarter of a percentage point on Wednesday.
This is a flashback to the 1970s when we had two-sided risks. Now, the Fed's job, its only job really, is to look at inflation and look at the labor market. And these two are in tension in a way they really haven't been since stagflation of the 1970s. There were bad signs in the labor market, which is the reason the Fed made this rate cut. Some people on the Fed want it to go lower. It probably will. There's signs that there'll be one or two more ticks. But everything else that we talked about this morning, if Donald Trump gets his economic wishes at the Fed and they keep cutting interest rates, that's going to be what Democrats can talk about, because it's going to really affect the economy in bad ways. There are very few economists who think that the United States at this point should cut rates down to the 3.5 rate, which is where Trump wants to see it, because they're in balance. This inflation and in a weak labor market, you lower the interest rates so that companies can borrow so they can hire more people and meet what they hope is increasing demand. But like Bert Flickinger at the Strategic Research Group and other forecasters have rightly predicted, prices are going up in key areas. Beef prices are at near all-time highs because of disease, because of feed shortages. And so this seemingly, the Fed just cut it by 2.5. This has got the makings, I think, of a major story, because the pressure on the Fed, this independent organization, is there to cut rates lower. If they do, we're going to probably be in an era of stagflation, high inflation, low job growth.
Well, I also think that the shrinking of the workforce because of Trump's immigration policies is also a factor that we're not talking enough about, because every single one of the individuals who have been deported was also a consumer in this country. Mm-hmm. And when we look at the labor shortage, not being able to find people to do jobs, we have restaurants that are just closing. They're not... Mm-hmm. They're not finding the workforce. We have employers who will just simply shut down. But then we also have issues on the demand side, where this important part of our consumer economy is also gone. And I think that we are in for a very rocky road, and that we're not talking enough about when. And it's stunning to me that the business community has not spoken out more about having some sort of rational immigration reform and policy, because we need people here. We need this workforce. Mm-hmm. We need immigration. And it is harming communities, again, urban and rural. So I think that that's the other piece of this that we're not talking about.
Yeah. And if this,
go ahead.
If this backfires, like most economists think it will, and we end up in an era of stagflation, then those companies that have eaten some of the tariffs are going to have to pass that tax on to the consumer, and it's going to just fold into the cycle.
So if the economists are negative, as you say, about this, what did Powell say, if anything, that addresses that negativity, particularly since he's been steadfast in not cutting the rate despite the haranguing from Trump and the threatening by Trump? So what is it that said to Powell, okay, now we'll do it, and particularly if economists are saying this is a bad move?
I think it's because he did see this since April, the labor reports have been soft. And I think that's what he's looking at now. But a quarter percent cut is not a big cut. It's nowhere near where many in the Trump administration want it to be. So I think it's a baby step that Powell's willing to take in order to, you know, create that two-sided risk, to have some stability in that two-sided risk. And the dot points that they use at the Fed to figure this out were all over the place. And so this is a rather conservative move, given where some of those dots actually were.
When you think of just the overall fight with the Fed, I mean, that this isn't going away, right?
It's not going away. And you know, most economists are trying to warn the Trump administration, you know, be careful, you might get what you ask for. And you really don't want you really don't want huge cuts. You want people to be able to borrow, businesses to borrow cheaper. But you don't want to rush this. It's a delicate balance. It really is. They call it a two-sided risk for a reason, and it is great risk there.
Let's get to a couple of letters that we have from our audience and see what's on their mind. And we go to Chris. This is in some of the issues that we've talked about in the past. Chris says, Democrats need to take a stand and shut down the government. If they give this up, then they may as well go home. They are perceived as weak, and they need to show some spine. What price do they pay? What price could they pay?
Look, I think that they have to respond to this perception of weakness, and they need to find the right rallying cry, and they need to find the right issues, and they need to speak in plain terms about kitchen table issues, as I've said. And that is what they need to do between now and the midterms if they have any hope of taking back at least the House.
Yeah, I agree. I think that they got to get a message, and they got to remember that, you know, politics is not a tea party. You've got to get in there, and you've got to be strong on message and show up every day and fight the good fight and be willing to take some risk here for your principles. If you don't have your principles as a party, you don't have much.
Sarah writes to us and says the Democrats need to not be complicit in co-signing and paying for what Trump is doing. They cannot win. They also cannot be on the record agreeing allowing businesses to proceed as normal is a concession. Senator Schumer rationalized that Trump would do horrible things if we allowed a government shutdown. He did so anyway. Compromising with fascism, and that is what it is. I use this label not because I oppose traditional Republican positions, but because we are now in the midst of an autocratic consolidation of corporate and government power and nativist in theme, which provides fascism. That from Sarah. All right. didn't know if anyone was going to take the bait on that. The answer, no. We move on to other subjects with our group this morning. And I want to get to the CDC and talk about the hearing and the takeaways from the fired CDC director that took place yesterday. Susan Meneres, who was fired last week as director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, told senators that Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. pressured her to support changes to the childhood vaccine schedule, subverting the agency's scientific expertise and endangering public health. The former CDC chief, who served in the position for only 29 days, told the Senate's Health Committee that Kennedy told her that, quote, he spoke to the president every day about changing the childhood vaccine schedule and that she, quote, needed to be on board with coming changes in September. The recommendations from the CDC called for administering multiple vaccines at key milestones, and potential changes to the schedule have alarmed major medical associations who worry that the nation's vaccine infrastructure may crack. Meneres' testimony on Capitol Hill marks her first appearance since the White House fired her in late August. She told the panel she was fired for, quote, holding the line on scientific integrity, citing concerns about her ability to continue leading the agency while, quote, preserving evidence-based decision-making. Throughout the hearing, some senators critical of Kennedy, who has an extensive history of anti-vaccine advocacy, sought to highlight what they believe is at stake, the potential for infectious diseases to reemerge and erosion of trust in public health. Some Republican and Republican senators allied with Kennedy pressed Meneres on the details of her meetings with Kennedy, casting her as out of step with the Trump administration and suggesting she was not trustworthy, and that determined by her 29 days in office.
She's got the great bumper sticker. She said, I could not replace evidence with ideology.
Yeah.
And that coming from a PhD in microbiology from the University of Wisconsin, someone who did a postdoc from Stanford, that's a good statement. What I worry about here is sort of the theme of today is that we're going to have two Americas. We're going to have the places like New York and New England that are going to go state vaccine routes, and the West Coast is going to go state vaccine routes, and other states that don't have that kind of political leadership are going to be left behind, and we're going to have sick people.
I also think that this is exactly what Trump said he was going to do. This is the loyalty test, and there are suggestions that she's not being truthful in what she said happened, but if what she said happened, then this is right out of that playbook. She said, I would not blindly say I'm going to support a report that I haven't seen. I'm going to look at the scientific evidence, as you said, and then make a decision. And that is not what this administration wants. So she failed the loyalty test and she lost her job.
And why would the administration and Trump and Kennedy want to bump heads against the childhood vaccination schedule when there are numbers of decades worth of vaccinations and the resulting favorable health results staring us in the eye, and yet they don't. They want to alter the childhood vaccine. What would they want to do that for? And as far as the COVID and the RSV and the flu shot, they're not mandatory, but we do know they work. I think I heard somebody yesterday still saying that the COVID vaccine was not safe. Well, you know, tell that to the millions of Americans who and people around the world who didn't die in that pandemic, but who took the COVID shot. Why would they buck that?
Yeah, I mean, it's,
tell me why.
Well, I want to.
Because
I really do.
Because you're asking for facts, logic, and reason, and
it's in short supply.
It's not there.
I mean, the question, and we have to go, but I mean, the question also is, in 29 days of the hiring of this woman, of like the obviously. Somebody should have looked and see what her beliefs were, that she was, as you pointed out, had these incredible credentials and would probably side with science.
Yeah, and she had been in the government since 2006 doing just that.
Yeah, it's not like it's a surprise of what they got. All right, we'll hold it there. My thanks to the great group this morning. Bob Brigham, Kathy Sheehan, and Ira Fussfeld, thank you very much for being with us. We'll continue right after this.